There are thousands of languages around the world, more than 6,000 by one count, but nearly half of those are disappearing, and many of those are indigenous languages. Rosalind Lapierre studies traditional ecological knowledge at the University of Montana, and she argues the loss of these languages means more than just losing the language itself. We lose something important about our understanding of the natural world. I spoke with her more about this recently via Skype. You say here that embedded in indigenous languages is an ecological knowledge, conservation methods. Describe that for us. What do you mean?
Well, I would argue that particular indigenous people, especially people who have lived in a particular ecosystem or landscape for a very long time, have developed a knowledge base about that particular ecosystem or about that particular landscape. And over time, that particular knowledge and observation then gets embedded into their language, where they can have very short words or phrases that can have a lot of information embedded in those short words or phrases, because they're speaking about something that they know about and have observed for a very, very long time.
Yeah. Give us an example or two.
I think I'll give my youngest daughter's name as an example. So my youngest daughter, her name is Ikudsimiskimaki, which that kind of sounds like a long name, but it's a Blackfeet name that contains a lot of information. It is often translated as red shell woman. It describes a red shell, and then it ends with Aki, which means female. But actually, her name means a lot more than red shell. It actually is a particular type of freshwater mussel that lives in the Missouri River here, both in Montana and the Dakotas. It's a particular shell that the Blackfeet have used for a very long time for religious purposes. It does have a particular color, which is not necessarily red. It's more salmon colored. So anyway, kind of embedded in her name is information about this one particular type of freshwater mussel shell, and also information about how it is used, because it's used for religious practice, and then also information about how it is thought of in Blackfeet cultural practice.
So let's talk about the translation aspect of this too, though. So you led a team of experts and scholars, elders, to create a lexicon of Blackfeet words, right? And you talk about the word herb in this article, and I want to talk a little bit about that example as well. So how is the definition of herb in Blackfoot different than how we would think about it in English?
So I was working with a group of elders and native language speakers on behalf of and with the National Museum of Natural History, and they were interested in creating a list of all of the materials that were in their museum that were Blackfeet materials, and they wanted them in the Blackfeet language. So from very simple things like, you know, what do you call a moccasin?
Right.
And, you know, because they have it moccasin, right, written in English. But what do the Blackfeet call it? And so one of the things that kept coming up with the herb example is that basically anything that was a plant species substance that was in the museum was just called an herb, whereas it was different types of plants. They were used for different things. And so the Blackfeet had it broken down in greater detail. They wouldn't just always call a plant a plant. And so we started making lists of the different species that they had in the museum and tried to give it that greater detail, the way it would be thought about, not only in kind of the language, but thought about and used in Blackfeet culture and traditional ways.
Yeah, and it can mean more than like spice for food, right? It means
yes.
It means often in your language like something that's medicinal, right?
Right. One of the things that the Blackfeet elders spoke about was in certain cases where in English it may be translated as a word such as plant, in Blackfeet, the word that they're using to describe it is not that it is part of the natural world. They describe it more as a tool that is being used for a particular purpose.
Right. That means something very different. Okay.
Yeah.
So there are efforts here in Arizona and around the world and the country to save native languages like this, right? To preserve them, to teach them to the next generation. But they almost seem like they're disappearing too quickly to stop the bleeding, for lack of a better phrase. I wonder what you think can be done or what approaches you think might work to try to preserve this, because it sounds like you think there's so much more being lost here than just a language.
Yeah, I think on the one hand, there are approaches such as documentation, right? Just basic documentation, so that you're almost like, creating information that then gets put into a library or an archives that people can go and find it later. But the other approach, which I think is really successful in a lot of communities, is teaching children the language. There are a lot of different schools and programs now across, Native North America that are working to teach children the language, because really a language is lost when people stop speaking it. It's not technically lost when people stop documenting it, right? We can continue to do those kinds of projects.
So you have to teach it to the next generation, you think?
Absolutely. And not just teach, but I mean, they have to actually speak the language. And it needs to be more than just inside a classroom. So it needs to become the return to being a language that is spoken within a community.
All right. Rosalyn LaPierre is an associate professor of environmental studies at the University of Montana. Rosalyn, thank you for coming on the show to talk to us about this.
Yes, thank you so much.